Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Sustainable Communities Summit presentation from 360summits.com. Sustainable communities, a very interesting subject, and today's presentation I think you'll find of particular interest. Our guest is Joe Quirk. He's an author, and he's an aquapreneur. Maybe you've never heard that word before. You're going to learn what an aquapreneur is. Joe Quirk is a science writer, novelist, and memoir ghostwriter with a national bestseller in each category. He has co-authored a book with Petri Friedman called Seasteading, How Floating Cities Will Change the World. It's published by Simon & Schuster, or will be published, rather, in 2017. He has consulted for Pixar, who volunteered to illustrate his presentation for college students. Joe helps lead a team of lawyers, engineers, business leaders, and investors to establish the first small floating city with unprecedented political autonomy in the waters of a host nation. That's different, huh? Okay. Joe Quirk, welcome to the program.
Hi, Alan. I'm glad you're as cheerful as I am.
This will be fun. Now, in detail, what is seasteading? And while you're at it, what is an aquapreneur?
An aquapreneur is someone who tries to create new societies on the ocean. I don't want to just say entrepreneur, because entrepreneur means you're working within an existing system to start a business or provide a service. An aquapreneur is starting his own business, his own system. And what if the way to reduce carbon in the atmosphere, restore fish populations to the oceans, power the world, and protect against sea level rise is to organically grow floating nano nations on the ocean? So that's not a job for an entrepreneur. That's a job for an aquapreneur.
Got it.
And the reason this is changing my life, it's when I realized that civilization may not be environmentally sustainable, but civilization could be better than sustainable, and it could be environmentally restorative. And that may sound too good to be true, but I want to tell your audience about an emerging technology that few are paying attention to, and those that are paying attention to us don't understand it. And it's seasteading. So seasteading is homesteading the high seas, the technology for politically independent cities that float on the ocean is at hand, and seasteaders plan to make it happen soon. So the Seasteading Institute is a nonprofit think tank from Silicon Valley, funded entirely by personal donations. And seasteaders are a global team of nautical engineers and aquaculture farmers and maritime attorneys and investors. And we plan to build cities that float on the ocean. And why do we care about this so much? Well, 45% of the Earth's surface is unclaimed by any country. And we want to provide the technology for anybody to start their own nano nation. And I'm so committed to this mission, I call myself a sea-vangelist.
So what are all the reasons you believe that seasteading is so important? You've touched on it, but I'll bet there's more to the equation.
So seasteading solves two problems at once, and they are two of the most important problems in the world: sea level rise and bankrupt governments stuck in the 20th century. The solution for sea level rise is obvious. If your coastal community can transition to floating, you're going to adapt to climate change. For the problem of bankrupt governments, seasteaders bring a unique solution. So we bring a Silicon Valley sensibility to solving the problem of poor governance. If you believe, as I do, that the source of solutions is startups, you know we're not going to solve complex social problems by working within the old system any more than you're going to get iPhones by working with IBM. So seasteaders believe it's time to break away and try something new.
Okay. Let's talk about the advantages and disadvantages of seasteading. I mean, I'm just uneducated on this subject, and the public is as well. So what are the advantages and disadvantages?
We call them the ocean tax and the land tax. So let's start with the disadvantages, because that's forefront in people's minds. It's easy to imagine the disadvantages, and it's difficult to imagine the advantages. So disadvantages, going to the high seas is expensive. Oil rigs can float in high waves for long periods of time. People live on them, and they call them floating cities, usually 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off. But only oil companies can afford them. So that's the engineering for floating communities. Another example of seasteading is a cruise ship. It's de facto self-governing. Many cruise ships fly the flags of Panama or Liberia, and they have no power to enforce their rules over the thousands of ships that fly their flags. So the captain of a cruise ship is a de facto dictator. Like, if you get drunk and start a fight, he can lock you in the brig. He can drop you off at the next island. What are you going to do about it? You sue him in Liberian court? So why doesn't the captain of a cruise ship engage in flogging and keel hauling? And this is the key mechanism that matters for seasteading. It's the right to jump ship. We don't need to argue about politics on a cruise ship. All we need is the power to choose a better offer. And history shows that what drives improvement in a market of governance is not the promises of politicians with power, but the power of individuals to choose something better. And this goes for people who work on cruise ships as well. Workers can quit one cruise line and choose another. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, cruise lines are offering poor people from Indonesia health care. It's far from perfect, but the more choices people have, the better the service becomes. And seasteaders want to increase the number of governance choices on our nano nations on the sea. And this leads us to, what are the advantages of seasteading? Starting over. So think about the industries that suck. Healthcare, education, banking, police security, everything that states micromanage gets more expensive and less serviceable. And where in the world can we create marvelous healthcare, fabulous education, ethical lending, and, you know, protective security that we trust? It's already been created on cruise ships. Cruise ships are the governance technology for civil society, and a seastead is a cruise ship that never docks. And the world is bursting with creative people who want to start over, start anew, just like the pioneers on the Western frontier. And existing states, of which there are only 193, force them to work through their system. And some of the people who reach out to us are physicians who want to offer faster, better, cheaper healthcare, just offshore existing cities. And medical tourism is one of the fastest growing sectors in the world economy. And a physician said at one of our seasteading conferences, you know, why take a plane across the world when you can take a ferry just offshore? And seasteading solves numerous social problems like this.
So as far as the location for a seastead, would it typically be close to land?
I think our plan is what we call strategic incrementalism. So we're with our floating island project, We're starting close to land. The struggle with the leap to the high seas is that it's very expensive. We want to start small and scale up very slowly. So our floating island project is something where we go to coastal governments and we negotiate with them to legislate us some level of administrative and regulatory autonomy. And if we can float in the territorial waters of a shallow, of a nation with lots of shallow waters, we can prove the business model for freedom and startup societies. These are built as modular platforms, which can be attached together. So say you have two platforms together would be about the size of a football field. If it economically succeeds, you could attach another platform, and you could attach another platform. As it scales up, we'll attract more engineers to solve the deeper engineering challenges of going to the high seas.
Now, are these platforms you're talking about, are they like just big barges?
The technology has already been demonstrated in Holland. They have the floating pavilion there, and it's designed by our Dutch engineers. And so the technology for building floating cities in shallow waters already exists. And these are environmentally restorative platforms. That's what's amazing about them. So imagine if you could restore coral reefs with your platform. So our Dutch engineers developed a plan to use platforms to protect against heat, which causes coral bleaching. Right? So by running sea drones underneath the platforms and testing before and after, they figured out the optimum height to create some shadows, but not enough to block the sunlight. And when we were scouting sites and diving to inspect corals in our potential sites, our engineer, Bart Rofen, was earnest to make sure the seafloor was at the range of heights he needed. So, you know, forget about sustainable cities. On the ocean, we can build restorative communities, and these floating islands will have a special jurisdiction for business freedom.
Very interesting. Okay. Now, how can seasteading reduce carbon dioxide in the atmosphere?
So I said before that floating islands could restore the environment. And what do I mean by that? And so I want to tell you about one of my favorite aquapreneurs featured in my forthcoming book. So Ricardo Radulovich is an agricultural water scientist from Costa Rica, and he plans to turn greenhouse gas and ocean pollution into food for the poor. And his secret is seaweed. It's one of the most nutritious plants in the world, of which 8,000 species have been counted, and none of which have undergone the artificial selection that has made, you know, corn, wheat, and soy so tremendously productive. So this is a new way of thinking about the world. Seaweed is an algae. Not many people know that we eat algae every day. We probably ate some this morning. It's in our coffee creamer. Algae is in ice cream, it's in toothpaste, it's in milk, it's in peanut butter, it's in beer. My wife put on her makeup this morning. Algae is used in makeup, it's used in paint, it's used in dyes. Seaweed is used in the fertilizers that land crops use. So algae already supports the agriculture that sustains human population. And if seaweed farms are going to scale up to the sizes needed to feed over 9 billion people in 2050, they're going to need a tremendous amount of nutrients and carbon to grow their own biomass. And where do we find that? Our Dutch engineers have a plan to get it from coastal dead zones all over the world where agriculture has dumped nutrient pollution. So seaweed build their biomass with this. And the more carbon you pull out of the ocean, the more carbon you pull out of the air. So scaling up mass seaweed farms on the ocean allows us to feed the world with greenhouse gas. And Ricardo has something called the Sea Gardens Project. He's received a grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the World Bank. And my friend John Guido, he's a business engineer in the American agriculture industry. And John has reached out to Ricardo and other seaweed aquapreneurs, and we are planning a company called Restorative Foods. So imagine eating to restore the ocean environment. This is beyond sustainable. This is restorative. And to quote Ricardo, he said, we should build space stations on the sea.
Wow. Quite interesting. And as you talk, it's fortunate for us that in our summit, one of our interviews is with Dr. Andrea Stanson, who is a finalist for the Mars One project to create a colony on Mars as early as 2020. And obviously that would be a self-sustaining community. But yours is every bit as interesting. And who knows? Okay, how can seasteading solve the overfishing problem?
So this is another business model for seasteading. So many people are horrified by overfishing, and I am too, because the oceans, the high seas are a commons that nobody owns. Humanity has taken 90% of the large fish out of the ocean. And what if the business model for seasteading could repopulate the oceans with fish? And do it with no measurable impact on the ocean. It's already happening. So Neil Sims is a fisheries biologist from Australia, and he seeks to feed the world with sustainable sashimi using free-floating aquapods that are like fish cages that move with the schooling fish to recreate conditions in the wild with negligible environmental impact. And his research has received awards from the National Science Foundation, and now Neil's got a partnership with Lockheed Martin. So imagine fish cages in the shape of giant soccer balls. They're like Buckminster Fuller's buckyball. And they're untethered, and they're free-floating on the ocean. Now, think of Hawaii as being a rock in a stream. And as the currents pass, they create little eddies that are 50 miles wide, right? And the cages go around in these big eddies, and the fish school as if they are wild. And they grow up in these cages, and a GPS follows them. And you can, when these fish grow up, you can find them and pick up the fish. It's called the Velella Research Project. And why were buffalo nearly made extinct while cows have increased their population? It's because we hunted buffalo, but we farm cows. And right now, we hunt fish. And many large fish are approaching extinction. But unlike corn and cow farms, which pollute the ocean, Neil Sims fish farms on the high seas so far have no measurable effect. And these fish are better than wild. They're well-fed. They have no detectable mercury, no parasites, no pesticides, no biofoulants are used. The Velella Research Project is a green, profitable technology for repopulating the oceans with happy fish. And it was one of Time Magazine's 25 best inventions of 2012. And Neil is after us for his seastead because he thinks this is such a good business model, this could be seasteading 1.0. So as Neil told me, he's like, we need to bring together the environmental motive, the humanitarian motive, the profit motive, so they are not at odds with each other, but aligned with each other. And he told me later, if it's not profitable, it's not sustainable.
That is extremely interesting. So How could Seasteed Technologies maybe replace fossil fuel?
So what if I told you that the largest solar panel in the world is the ocean? So Lockheed Martin is, you know, they're a U.S. aerospace company. They estimate that each day the tropical ocean absorbs 3 times the amount of energy that the entire world consumes. And what if I told you we already know how to tap this massive amount of energy, and the technology was shown to work during the Carter administration? So the technology is called ocean thermal energy conversion, or OTEC. And I want all your listeners to look this up. So here's how it works. In the tropics, the water at the surface of the ocean is very warm, while 1,000 feet below, it's very cold. And if we send a 1,000-foot pipe into the ocean depth, we have a gigantic temperature difference from the top of the pipe to the bottom. And that can drive a gigantic steam engine that can produce a massive amount of electricity. So Patrick Takahashi, one of my favorite aquapreneurs, he's a biochemical engineer from Hawaii. He wants to use OTEC to provide a renewable permanent source of energy for floating cities. And here's the thing, Alan, these cities will increase the number of ecosystems on the planet. So Seasteed farms based on OTEC are drawing nutrients from the depths of the ocean into the sunlight. The deep ocean is just full of fertilizer. And when you draw it up, that's where photosynthesis can engage. So you're creating new ecosystems in places where none existed before. So imagine if your city increased the plant life on the earth and absorbed more carbon from the oceans that way. So Patrick Takahashi and his team, they calculated that a self-sustaining ocean ecopolis could be built with 1% of the budget of NASA. And this could be the fountain of life on the ocean. Virtually infinite nutrient wealth from the deep ocean, a virtually infinite energy from solar panels as large as the ocean, and a whole lot of fresh water from the process of harvesting the abundance. And Lockheed Martin said, and I quote, "Water will be the next oil." So if we build civilization with OTEC plants, we could put an end to wars for oil, wars for water, wars for the meager little less than a third of the Earth's surface we fight over. How about instead of drilling into rock, we just dip long pipes into the water from floating islands? Does it sound fantastical? Right now, China is building an OTEC plant, and about a half dozen island nations are commissioned OTEC International to build OTEC plants. The Bahamas is commissioned to build 2 OTEC plants. And Lockheed Martin claims that each commercial OTEC plant could create between 3,000 and 4,000 direct jobs.
Now, Joe, you mentioned OTEC many times in your explanation there, but you only gave us what the abbreviation stands for once. Now, what is that again, in case people would like to Google that?
Ocean Thermal Energy Conversion, OTEC. And, you know, acronyms drive me crazy, too, because I talk to so many experts that use acronyms, and I say, stop using acronyms. And now I'm doing it. And if you look up Patrick Takahashi or Ted Johnson and Jeremy Feekins, these are some of the leaders in pushing this forward. And now some of these guys are working for companies that are selling these to countries. And Seasteaders are interested in getting them outside of countries and onto the high seas. And this is a floating technology.
It's extremely fascinating. Okay, now let's get down to earth. We're kind of up in the clouds in our thoughts here. In other words, the cloud is really rolling. This seems to make a ton of sense. Where is seasteading likely to get started?
I'm so glad you asked. So imagine if seasteading started in the most beautiful place on Earth.
Okay.
In some of the calmest waters on the ocean, among some of the nicest people in the world. So in late September, our team of 10 met with the president of French Polynesia, Edward Fritsch, several government ministers and mayors. And it all started when Polynesian businessmen, led by this marvelous guy named Mark Collins, they reached out to the Seasteading Institute, and they gave us a 10-day tour of potential sites for floating islands. And we visited aquaculture scientists. We dove and inspected the coral reefs with our engineer, Bart. We toured the businesses working to bring forth the blue economy there. And it all culminated when the 10 of us gave this extended, detailed presentation to the president and his cabinet at the presidential palace. And these guys were very intense. Their poker faces were perfect. And we're like, are we convincing them or do they think we're crazy? And when we were done, it was amazing to hear these ministers and mayors speak up. I mean, these politicians did not hold back. They did not wait for consensus. They didn't check the polls or ask a team of writers to prepare a statement. Like, right there, on camera, they all spoke from the heart. And one of the mayors of the Outer Islands, he gave this spontaneous, impassioned plea in front of a Japanese documentary team filming the proceedings. And he says he deals with sea level rise every month. His people's water tables are turning to salt water. And he says he's worried about climate refugees. And I was particularly moved to meet the mayor of Raiatea, Mayor Sylviane. I can't pronounce her full Polynesian name, so I'm not even going to try. And when we met with her, she's the mayor of this island, and we proposed our special economic zone. Her first question was, how long do we have to train the youth for jobs? And when Randy, the executive director of the Seasteading Institute, he asked her if there's any experiments we can run on her island's behalf. And she was like, yeah, can we relax French regulations? So after that meeting, Monty Cosma, our business advisor, he looked at me and he said, this is better than jobs. This could be the innovation platform and school where these kids become the entrepreneurs and job creators of the blue economy. So the technologies for coping with sea level rise all over the earth are intimately linked to economic and social development. And why are we doing this in French Polynesia? It's in the middle of the Pacific. And the country has many aspects suitable for seasteading. So most importantly, in 2004, they gained administrative autonomy. So they are free to create as many special economic zones as they deem wise. My lawyer tells me it's more complicated than that, but basically that's it. And how much space does French Polynesia have to experiment with floating sea zones, which is the legislation that my seasteading lawyer has written up? French Polynesia is as large as Western Europe. And the Minister of Land Affairs told me that only 1/1,000th of it is land. So my favorite quote from him was, as Minister of Land Affairs, I believe it is time to look to the sea. So because of the unique topography of all these islands and atolls at various depths, we can begin the incremental steps to freedom on the high seas. And it's close enough to the equator that there are few large waves. People live on stilts right on the water, on these turquoise seas. And if we are successful, French Polynesia could become a leader in a brand new industry exporting the technology for coping with sea level rise around the world. So we met with the construction businesses who build for the blue economy. And here's the deal we suggested, we co-proposed with regard to the environment. And it's basically don't micromanage our projects with old regulations. Tell us what standards you want to uphold, and we will exceed them. So if you grant us speed, we will give you a better result than your regulations are designed to achieve. And that's how we're going to build a floating island, which will have special jurisdiction for business freedom, and will create prosperity and hire local people.
Joe, I'm certain we have some listeners that don't have a good idea of geographically just where French Polynesia is located. How would you describe that?
It's smack dab in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. I flew there from LA in 7.5 hours. And when you hear about the legends of people finding women with hoop skirts and eating from coconuts and eating this magical thing called breadfruit, which is a perfect combination of bread and fruit, paradise as it was sold to the West 50 years ago, they're talking about French Polynesia. They're talking about Tahiti, which is the main island, right?
Right.
So this remote paradise that people sold stories about and magical photographs is no longer remote. They have 52 airports. You can fly there, you know, three time zones for me to fly to New Jersey, three time zones for me to fly to Tahiti. It's remote no more. The fiber optic cable is just recently been connected. So now Skyping with people in French Polynesia is as easy as talking to my neighbor. Next year, Pixar is coming out with a movie based on French Polynesia. So people are going to be aware of it. So this once remote island, I think we're going to draw a new map of the world where this is going to be the center of the blue economy and the center of civilization. And we're going to start the incremental steps towards self-sustaining communities out there.
That is so intriguing. How many people would you typically find in a seastead self-sustaining community?
It depends on what stage of seasteading we're talking about. So in 2017, if we get permission from the president, we want to start with less than 100 people on two platforms that take up the size of one football field. And by 2050, our Dutch engineers, Blue 21, say they want 1 billion people living on several floating cities around the world. No, I'm not kidding. They calculated that with 14% of humanity living on floating eco-cities that use these environmentally restorative technologies of the ocean, civilization will achieve carbon balance with the planet such that we will emit and what we absorb will be equal. And they call this cyclical metabolism, where the algae farms absorb what the land farms give off. And they propose we need a total ocean space the size of Madagascar or less than 1% of the ocean. So that's the long view. Starting in the next few years, we plan to start very small and scale up as it succeeds economically. So 2020, I expect a few floating platforms demonstrating that eco-cities work and that business freedom works. And I hope we set such a positive example, humanitarian, economic, environmental, that these platforms expand, more are attached, and engineers are attracted to solve the engineering challenges of going to the high seas at a lower cost. So oil rigs exist now, but my colleague, Chris Muglia, hopes to ramp up the technology of 3D printing so that the high seas, the cities become cheaper and as aspects of construction technology become an information technology, this construction could get cheaper and cheaper. And is he crazy? We always get asked it, are you crazy? Well, he's working with Bob Ballard, who's the most famous oceanographer in the world, who discovered the Titanic and has been called Carl Sagan with gills. And Chris Mulia has worked in shipping yards all over the world. He's spent about 15 years as a mariner at sea. He's been a project manager for numerous sea projects, and he thinks he can disrupt the shipping industry with the 3D printed seastead industry. And Bob Ballard is more sold on this idea than he is on going to Mars. By the way, Bob Ballard is also a cheerleader for Neil Sims, the guy with the fish cages. So once we can connect these platforms together, we can create large cities on the high seas. And once these are profiting, like cruise ships profit, all bets will be off as far as expansion into the seas.
Okay. Is there a place you would look today for existing seastead living? Is it there now?
I usually use the example of cruise ships, which are basically floating cities that don't dock.
Okay.
If you want seasteading, I have so many examples, it's hard to think of enough, but seasteading 1,000 years ago, I would look to the most beautiful city in the world, Venice. People who were sick of their violent government fled to a swamp where they built civilization on stilts. That was a startup society. It was a free city-state on the water, and it became so wealthy, it dominated the Mediterranean for 1,000 years, producing artists like Vivaldi and uncountable explorers and business people. If Venetians can do that with muscle power and firewood, we can do it with diesel and hydraulics, and we just need the courage.
Okay. Now, let's talk about people here. What are the personality traits of, individuals that would seastead?
So over 3,000 people have filled out our survey specifying what they need from our floating island project in detail. And they are a diverse group from all over the world and every income bracket. And what they all have in common is they are badasses. They're people with a pioneering spirit who want to be on the cutting edge of creating the new world. And this world is full of pioneers who want to make the next new world. And they have already sought us out and volunteered to help. And I know that seasteading will be succeeding when it's not just about attracting these badasses who want to build the future, but regular people who choose it because it's a better offer than what they get on land. So the same way, you know, the first people to sail ships were pioneers, but now people just choose cruise ships without changing their ideology to anarcho-capitalist because it's just better governance. People feel safe on cruise ships. They enjoy the entertainment. And when people are choosing seasteading because it's awesome, then there will be no stopping it. But we need the pioneers to get it started, and we have a roster full of them, and we haven't even built the damn thing yet.
Okay. Now, you mentioned this survey that obviously is online. What's the address? Where's the survey located? Promote this a little bit.
Seasteading.org. Our floating city project is featured. And you can just Google seasteading.org floating city project, and you can read about the project. There's a lot of detail. I give a short video summing up the basics. You can read our seasteading implementation plan written by the engineers. You can read about our cost estimates. And then you can fill out our survey, and we will take very seriously what you say about wanting broadband, about how much square footage you're willing to have, what kind of freedom you're going to need. We're taking all of that into account in how we construct our city. The problem is the estimates were based on the Gulf of Fonseca and in Honduras. That came out to about $500 a square foot if we provide walkable parks and nice trees, and less than $400 a square foot if we make the whole thing apartments with no trees. But we have not yet figured out what this will cost in French Polynesia. Okay? So here's the big
thing. Will it be less?
Well, there's a trade-off. So it will be less in this sense. Waves in the Gulf of Fonseca are large, which means we had to design these things to be sturdy. Waves in French Polynesia are very mild, and we can be inside protected atolls, which means we can build much cheaper structures. It sounds like paradise for seasteading, but not so fast. French Polynesia is remote. The Gulf of Fonseca is not. So the cost to ship materials from New Zealand would add to the price. So we have to redo all our estimates and figure this out. But here's the thing. It will probably be cheaper than what it costs to live in Manhattan or in my hometown of Oakland. And what we need to do is sell free jurisdictions to business people who can profit by floating their business. And then they hire people in the same way that, you know, Manhattan supports dog walkers and shoe shiners and sculptors. Civilized people with money want all the accoutrements of civilization, and they will provide for workers to live there and clean and cook and open a restaurant.
I want to ask you about let's take the Polynesia seastead proposal, for example. And let's take people in the United States, for example, and they're considering moving there. I want to talk about the media. What will be the television access and internet speed, for example?
It's vital that we have Silicon Valley level internet on our seastead or our floating island. French Polynesia's got their fiber optic cable set up, and the internet on the islands itself is spotty. So the one of two things is going to happen. The first floating island will act as sort of an internet oasis, and people will go there to get flawless internet. We didn't get internet. It's just, I'm spoiled by Silicon Valley. We're having this conversation. It's great. The French Polynesia has to get their fiber optic cable hooked up on their on all the islands of their country. And it has to do with governance and monopolies in their on their country, which the seastead is going to get around. So we're going to be outside that sort of setup, and we're going to have flawless internet. So hopefully they can get, by the time we get our seastead set up, they'll have it on the local islands as well.
And the internet, the flawless internet, as you describe it, that would also deliver your television that everyone would want.
Oh, yes. I plan to continue my seavangelism from our floating island. And I'll tell you what.
Everything is sea with you, Joe. Everything's sea. You're an aquapreneur and you're a seavangelist, and I don't blame you.
I learned early that it's such a counterintuitive way of thinking about solving problems that you have to use new words to knock people out of what they're thinking about. So if I say civilization, people say, oh, that's the thing where you fight wars and kings take control and you get governments and they tax you and they, you know, execute you if they want to. And if I say civilization, it's like, oh, well, that's cute. It's like, no, because I think seasteads will not be properly characterized as nation states because I think they won't be monopolies on governance. If seasteads are modular and disassemblable, people can detach and vote with their house and go somewhere else and found their own little floating nano nation. So seasteads will be like cruise ships. They'll be businesses that compete for the approval of people to attach to them. And the better governance you provide, the better, the more successful you will be. So there will be no monopoly of people just raising your taxes and providing poor service. There will be business people hustling to provide better service. So this will be variation by governments and selection by citizens. Variation and selection is the secret recipe for evolution. On the sea, we could have evolution in governance among voluntary societies, and we could see tremendous progress that we can't imagine now.
Joe, I can't wait to read your book. When's it coming out, and what's the title?
The title is Seasteading: How Ocean Cities Will Change the World, co-written with Patry Friedman, the grandson of Milton Friedman, who is fulfilling the Friedman legacy. Patry's father, David Friedman, wrote The Machinery of Friedman. Milton Friedman, his grandfather, wrote Freedom to Choose, and Seasteading is Patry's conception of the machinery of freedom to choose.
Okay.
What I've been saying, I know it sounds dizzying. So please check out the 8 Great Moral Imperatives of Seasteading, which is a video series I made featuring 8 of my favorite aquapreneurs. The 8 Great Moral Imperatives of Seasteading. Those people are finished, are set up in my book, and that will be published in March of 2017, March 21st.
Totally fascinating. That kind of sums it up for me. This is just very, very interesting. I want to stay in touch. I look forward to doing another interview with you down the road, and I encourage people to check out, what is it, seasteading.org? That's the corporate website?
Yeah, that's the website of our nonprofit. It's basically homesteading the sea. And if you look up Floating Island Project or the Aquatic Age, you'll find us. And my name is Joe Quirk.
Q-U-I-R-K. Joe, we've got to wrap it up, and we want to thank you so much for being a guest on our Sustainable Community Summit. And this is just totally fascinating. So thank you, sir, and look forward to talking to you again.
Alan, I really appreciate what you do, and I'm honored to be a part of it.